All right, the next case is Keith versus Data Enterprises. Again, the next case is Keith versus Data Enterprises. You may approach.
May it please the court, my name is Josh Dickinson, and I represent the appellant, Brady Keith, in this matter. Your Honor, this case began when Data Enterprises, the defendant in this case, provided a point-of-sale credit card system to retail operations at Backdoor Burgers restaurant. Those particular data point credit card machines were not in compliance with a federal data privacy statute known as FACTA, the Fair and Accurate Credit Transaction Act, that requires certain masking of credit card receipts so that data thieves cannot take a credit card, see the credit card number, see the expiration date, and use that to steal someone's identity. No question that the machines that Data Enterprises put into the Backdoor Burgers facility were not in compliance with that statute. My client, Brady Keith, was a customer of Backdoor Burgers, received a receipt that was not in compliance, and ultimately filed a class action FACTA lawsuit in federal court here in the District of Nebraska. After several years of litigation of that matter, and after the matter was tendered to Data Enterprises for defense and indemnification and rejected, ultimately Backdoor Burgers decided to settle the federal class action lawsuit, and as a part of that settlement, agreed to the entry of a judgment of approximately $2.7 million for the class relief, and also agreed to transfer its rights as to all claims that it had as with respect to Data Enterprises.
Is that settlement in our record?
I'm sorry?
Is that settlement in our record?
I don't know if the settlement is in the record. It was certainly pled as part of the complaint, but I do not believe that it was attached to the complaint itself.
There's no ability. There was a hearing on the motion to dismiss, correct? There's no bill of exceptions before us with regard to that hearing, so we don't know whether...
There was not a hearing, Your Honor.
There wasn't a hearing?
No, the judge
referred to a hearing in his order.
I believe the judge ruled off the papers, Your Honor, but I could be mistaken on that. There may have been a brief hearing on the matter. But no, they were at the pleading stage, and so the agreement itself, we haven't gotten into discovery to get into the specifics of the agreement. At this point, the judge dismissed the case on the pleadings, and we believe in doing so committed three distinct points of error. One, the judge required that Mr. Keith plead the class action allegations that were part of the federal court action. Two, the judge ruled that there is a required special relationship that has to be pled and proved under Nebraska law. And three, the judge erroneously found that Backyard Burgers was an active tortfeasor in the pleadings before the court. And we believe that all three of those points were error and contrary to Nebraska law at the pleading stage. With respect to the first issue of whether Mr. Keith was required to plead and essentially relitigate the class issues that had already been litigated in federal court, we believe that that's clear error. At this point, those issues are res judicata and determined by the federal court as to whether it was appropriate for the class to be certified, whether the settlement was appropriate, and all of those issues have been determined by the federal court. The only issue that was before the trial court is whether there had been an appropriately pled equitable indemnity claim from Mr. Keith, who now stands in the shoes of Backyard Burgers against Data Enterprises, and we believe that that was properly pled. There was no requirement that we have to plead and relitigate the class issues as the court held. The second issue is whether under Nebraska law it's required in an equitable indemnity claim that the plaintiff plead a special relationship between the parties. We believe that there's no requirements and there's no case law that requires that under Nebraska. The cases that were cited to by the defendant in the case all dealt with workman's comp claims. And there's no case law that requires in an ordinary indemnification claim, equitable indemnification claim, that a special relationship be pled.
Didn't the court find that for the implied indemnity there needed to be a special relationship?
Yes, Your Honor.
And isn't equitable indemnity different than the implied indemnity?
Equitable indemnification is different than implied indemnification. But we believe that we've pled in a claim for equitable indemnification in that our Backyard Burgers, who we now stand in the shoes of, was required pursuant to the federal court judgment to pay more than they ought to have paid in the case.
Well, and wasn't the court's problem with the equitable indemnity not the special relationship issue, but the willfulness, the passive active theory?
Sure.
Right.
And I would say, yes, that was another facet, but I do believe that the court also erred in finding that there had to be a special relationship.
Implied indemnity.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Okay.
So, I, Judge Reedman, I'll get to your point. That's the next point of error that I was going to discuss, but just very quickly to put a loop around the special relationship, the Madden Court, which is a federal court looking at this issue, predicted that Nebraska Supreme Court would not require a special relationship in an equitable indemnification.
But the Madden case, interestingly, was an equitable indemnity case and not an implied contractual indemnity case. So they kind of mixed the theories a little bit, didn't they?
Agree.
Yeah.
And again, we believe we have pled an appropriate claim for equitable indemnification. And in that sense,
that's your strongest argument.
Correct. Is an equitable indemnification.
To the extent there should be a special relationship in an implied contractual indemnity case, you would agree there's no special relationship in your case.
I would agree. The issue, Your Honor, is that special relationships haven't been defined in this context. They've only been, in our view, they've only really been defined in the workman's comp context.
But it has been defined, for example, in Harsh International, to not include a vendor-vendee relationship.
Correct. That is what Harsh held.
Yeah. And that would work against you here.
It would, candidly, against us, which is why we believe we've pled a claim for equitable indemnification.
Right. So moving to the equitable.
Yeah, so certainly, as my time ticks down, I'll circle back to Judge Reedman's point. With respect to active versus passive tortfeasor here, we believe that we have, in fact, pled a claim that Backyard Burgers was the passive tortfeasor here and that the active tortfeasor was, in fact, Data Enterprises. And the reason we believe that is they're the ones who installed the system. They're the ones who did everything that put the system in noncompliance, which ultimately led to the lawsuit. My client is not in the credit card box business. They are. They hired them as their vendor to come in and properly install the system, and they didn't. What the defendant has seized upon, however, is as part of the settlement, the Backyard Burgers in the settlement stated that they, in fact, acted in a willful manner.
Which is what they had. You had to have willful in order to get to the damage amount that you got to.
Correct. Under FACTA, you can only obtain statutory damages under the statute if there's a willful violation of the statute. And so that's how it was pled in the settlement agreement. It is important to point out, though, that under federal law, under the Fair Credit, or under the FACTA statute, willfulness is akin to recklessness. In other words, if you meet a recklessness standard, that is synonymous with meeting a willfulness standard.
And so does that not act as an admission by Backyard Burgers that they engaged in willful violations?
And I understand that's the defendant's arguments. In our view, they're conflating two different issues. What one has to plead as part of a settlement agreement in order to essentially ultimately push a settlement through in federal court, it really isn't binding upon anything that happens in the subsequent indemnification proceeding. We believe that the trial court erred in finding that as part of the pleadings and dismissing the case at the pleading stage. They certainly are allowed to make those arguments as part of discovery and uncover what the actual relationship is and who was the passive who was a passive and who was an active tortfeasor. But the fact that in the underlying federal court action, there was a settlement that required certain language in order for the settlement to ultimately go through, isn't dispositive upon the trial court's determination as to who is an active tortfeasor in this case.
Well, it wasn't just language to get the settlement to go through. It was language necessary to reach the amount of damages that your client wants.
Well, yes and no. I mean, certainly a finding of willfulness, which is akin to recklessness, was critical to the federal court findings. And although this part isn't in the record and would ultimately be part of the record when this case goes forward in discovery, it should be pointed out that Backyard Burgers, in fact, had not been in compliance with the statute several years earlier, which sort of fed into and supported the notion of recklessness finding in federal court.
So the district court order actually refers to a hearing on the matter on January 4th, 2017, and it's somewhat problematic in the issue you've just been discussing. Is that the judge refers to, at the hearing in this case, plaintiff's counsel stated that the amount of the consent judgment was based on statutory damages for willful conduct, which you and Judge Reedman have just been discussing. So that's not evidence, obviously, but it seemed to have been asserted to the judge at that point, and the judge made a decision. Perhaps that court had the actual agreement. I don't know. We don't have it here.
Sure.
So it's problematic, as you've just been discussing, in being able to say that your client was not a willful, passive, or active participant. You see the issue?
And if I may continue to answer your question.
Yeah.
And Judge, my response to that would be, again, I believe it's conflating two issues. What has to be pled in the federal court proceeding as a part of the settlement doesn't bind what the trial court's obligations are to make the determination at Nebraska common law as to who's an active and who's a passive tortfeasor here. I mean, and I would concede that the court could take that into once discovery is allowed to go forward, the court could take that into consideration when ultimately making the determination. But we've pled what we need to plead. Ultimately, it should go to discovery, and then the court can weigh that issue along with all the other issues to make a determination as to whether or not my client ultimately can proceed forward on the indemnification.
And
client.
I want to clarify, you didn't appeal the dismissal of count six. Correct.
Correct.
So it's 1 through 5. And I also want to clarify, with regard to the contract and negligence claims and the statute of limitations, in terms of those being independent claims, you would agree the statute of limitations would have run.
I would concede that, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. What I would say is that I believe that all of the claims are grounded in indemnification, and therefore we're not willing to concede them. But if this court ultimately made the determinations that dividing these up into 5 counts was sort of inartful and allowed us just to proceed forward on count 4, which was the indemnification claim, we wouldn't quibble with the court's determination in that regard.
Your claim is really under equitable indemnification.
Our claim is solely under equitable indemnification. We pled the others as sort of bootstrap claims, but again, count 4 is really what we believe should be allowed to proceed forward to discovery.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. How much time did we take Mr. Dickinson over? Okay, we'll add it to Ms. Mato's time to the extent you need it.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you. I'm Emily Mato of Baylor Evanen Law Firm. I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Data Enterprises, Inc. Throughout the briefing, they're commonly referred to as DCR, and that's because that's a predecessor entity, but to the extent I say DCR, we're still referring to Data Enterprises as the same entity. Just a couple of additional facts that I wanted to point out. Obviously, as you know, my client was in the business of processing debit and credit card transactions. And on May 25th, 2011 is when this federal class action was filed against Backyard Burgers in the U.S. District Court of Nebraska. And the federal complaint alleges that Backyard Burgers violated federal law by printing these expiration dates on the receipt. Now, that conduct allegedly took place between November 3rd of 2010 through April 15th of 2011. And it's important to note that the appellee was not a party to any of this litigation, even though it was well known at that time that they were the credit card processing group that was putting this together for Backyard Burgers. So for some reason, which the appellee is unaware, Backyard Burgers in that litigation agreed to this consent judgment for $2.8 million for willful behavior, for its own willful behavior.
Now, do we have any evidence in our record of that fact, that it was willful behavior to which they admitted?
I believe that the complaint was pretty lengthy, and I was trying to look back through the transcript, but The settlement or the consent judgment itself was cited at length in the complaint, and I believe that that is referred to as part of that agreement, as at least part of establishing the damages and part of what Backyard Burgers agreed to as part of that judgment. And as part of that, they also did not challenge the class certification, simply agreed to it. And as you know, Backyard Burgers also purported to assign appellant any claims they might have against the appellee. And so it's important to note that appellant and his class are not seeking any claims against appellee that they have in their own right. They're relying on this assignment. And those claims are, there's a couple of breach of contract claims, negligence claim, negligent misrepresentation, indemnification. Appellant and his class assert that DCR had a duty to indemnify Backyard Burgers, and then this failure to comply with FACTA.
Ms. Motto, can you address your strongest argument as to why the equitable indemnification should not be allowed to move forward based on the record that we have?
Sure. I mean, I think generally Nebraska case law stands for the proposition that equitable indemnification is generally based on the notion that one person has paid something that another ought to pay. But along with that, I mean, that's a very general umbrella. Along with that, though, the person asking for indemnification cannot also be at fault. And obviously, we have this discussion of that they are admitting to willful negligence. And, you know, it's a little difficult.
But they can be passively.
I agree that case law allows for them to be passively. But I guess I'm not understanding for the purposes of the consent judgment we rely on. Okay, we're saying this is the damages, $2.8 million based on willful conduct. We're going to rely on that so we can get this through without my client being involved. But when we get to now the trial court stage, we're not going to rely on that. We're not going to rely on that willful negligence happened. And part of establishing indemnification is establishing underlying liability. So are we saying that underlying liability has been established or not? I think that's really problematic if now we're trying to back off of what was agreed to in the consent.
It sounds like a good defense, but, you know, on a motion to dismiss, there's a lot of latitude granted, right, in terms of what's being pled and an opportunity to obtain proof.
Certainly. And that's not our only, I mean, I think their equitable indemnification claim has a lot of other issues. One of them would be that the party claiming indemnity must have discharged a debt of the other
Is that
person.
Absolute?
I think it's been stated. I mean, the Downey case has stated it. I think the Greer-Melkus case states it. You know, the problem with indemnification, at least from my perspective looking at Nebraska law, is, you know, there's some more clear-cut principles that apply to express and implied. I don't think equitable is as clear-cut. I think you kind of have to piece together what the court has found acceptable and not. And I think Downey definitely stands for the proposition that you need to have discharged a debt for another. And in this case, you know, there's certain preconditions that came along with the consent judgment, one of which would be that Backyard Burgers, or the appellant, I'm sorry, first had to go after our client before it could collect anything from Backyard Burgers. So really, Backyard Burgers assigned this claim, but they haven't paid anything. They haven't been liable for anything. And they did not discharge a debt owed by my client. There's nothing in that settlement agreement or consent judgment or pled in the complaint that says, look, DCR is off the hook from any other party or any other you know, person who received one of these receipts.
But so, how do we make that determination without the consent judgment before us? We don't know any of that language.
I mean, I think, well, I guess it's just that it's not in the complaint, and I think that that's a requirement to properly plead that claim. You know, if he would have had an allegation in the complaint that said, you know, this consent judgment discharged a debt or an obligation of DCR, I think we'd be in a different position. But the fact that it's not in there, I think is fatal. And along with the fact that they also pled this willful, that they were willfully negligent. And I really don't think, I mean, I know that we purposely, there was a hearing on this, and we purposely did not offer evidence because we wanted to stand on the pleadings. The complaint itself is very thorough. But the trial court was careful to note that the complaint embraces the federal complaint and the settlement agreement, which I think is supported by Nebraska law in the Lindsay case that's cited. I mean, the court...
So maybe we could have looked at it if we had it, but we don't have it in our record.
Well, and I worry that if... I think it was embraced in that... And I don't think the court noted that they looked at it. I just think it was embraced in that it's cited and referred to and relied upon in making this indemnity claim.
And since they referenced the federal case in the complaint, is it your position that this court can then look at the federal opinions with regard to this case that discuss the consent judgment?
You know, the case law talks about what the complaint embraces. I know they can look at, I believe they can look at matters of public record. I think that is something that...
Wouldn't that be matters of public record?
I believe so. So I would think that they can, and I think that is something that is well embraced. And in fact, I think that's what they rely upon in even making this claim. Because otherwise, if they're not, these claims are very much time-barred. And I think that the claims are very much time-barred as it is. I don't think you can use indemnification as a tolling mechanism. I think it's a claim in its own right. And, you know,
well, the indemnification claims are time-barred. Is that there's, you've not made an argument. I have not said that. Now, I think it's fatal in other respects. I just think that they can't bootstrap indemnification for negligence and breach of contract. I think that's improper, and that those, that may become a proof issue for them. Right? Yeah. So, what about your argument with regard to claim and the district court's decision with regard to the class action status and that that was not properly raised in this complaint?
I mean, I think that the point is well taken that, you know, it's very interesting to me that they're able to reap all the benefits of a class action and not replead it. And it wasn't even challenged. I mean, I think the res judicata argument is a little bit watery when it wasn't litigated. If you look at the public records, it was clearly just consented to. Nobody ever objected. And so I do think they were required to plead it. Now, if this case or this court finds that that, you know, was maybe improper, I don't think that the decision hinges on that.
I mean, because Keith did step into the shoes of Backyard Burger, right?
Right. It was reported that the assignment was correct, that that was what he was attempting to do.
So in essence, it's an action by Backyard Burger against your client.
Right. Right. And so, again, I mean, I think the point is well taken by the court, and I think that he did need to plead that again, but to the extent this court finds that improper, I don't think the decision hinged on that, and I think that even if that was, if anything, it was picked up. But I don't think that that really hinges or saves the fact that the indemnity claims are improper and the other claims are barred by the statute of limitations.
So can we go back just for a minute to the idea that before a party can seek indemnification on a judgment, they have to pay out that judgment first, or they just have to have that judgment?
Well, a lot of the case law, and Downey specifically, seem to indicate, again, it'd be nice if there were some more cases that were clear in this area, but generally it does say that they need to pay out. And obviously, if there's some preconditions in this case that they need to come after us first, so they haven't actually paid out, they haven't actually incurred damages. And along with that, I mean, I think if, you know, they would have discharged the debt or some other factor to kind of bolster this indemnity claim, I just think there's so many problems with it that, you know, it makes it difficult. You know, if just one of those were an issue, you know, I don't know that Nebraska case law says you actually have to pay the judgment. I think Downey does stand for that proposition, and the words are used as such, but I don't think anybody has challenged that specific point and said, is a judgment enough for a judgment with preconditions? Does that change things? I don't think it's clear, but I think the other issues make this equitable indemnity claim very problematic and improper.
Certainly an unusual case from the standpoint of the consent judgment, right, and yet your client was not involved in that.
Well, and that's problematic, too, because I understand from an indemnity perspective, you do not need to have everybody in at one time. I mean, that's the point of indemnity. You can later, once you discharge someone's debt or take over more than what you feel like your fair share is, you can go after them. But the complaint actually talks about they were negotiating with our client at the time, trying to get them involved. Why didn't they third party them in? I don't know. Again, there's a lot of things in this case that are unusual. And so I just think that it makes the claim fatal at this juncture. I just don't think that they've pled under Nebraska law an equitable indemnity claim. I definitely don't think they've pled an express or implied indemnity. That's pretty clear. So, unless the judges have any other specific questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And I don't think there's any rebuttal time. All right, thank you both very much. The matter is submitted and you're excused.
Thank you, Your Honor.